computer. Okay. What is the condition? What is the condition? The condition is, as long as we do not intend to make a charitz. So what does it mean to make a charitz? So what's very important here is what is a person's intent and what in fact are we doing? So what's the issue? Why does Rabbi Shimon say that we are allowed to take a bench and we're allowed to drag it and make a furrow, right? Now, what do I want to do? Let's pretend it's Shabbos afternoon. And on Shabbos afternoon, what do I want to do? I want to have Sudash the sheep. It's a beautiful day outside. But when I go outside, I realize that my configuration in order to host the number of people, is, shall we say, not going to work. What do I need to do? I need to reconfigure my entire backyard. And how do I reconfigure my entire backyard? Part of the process is going to be necessary is for me to literally take a table and to schlep it across the field, my backyard. What's the problem? I'm going to dig. I potentially might come dig a hole. But says Rabbi Shimon, well, look at this Gemara. What is this Gemara telling me? It's not a problem. Why isn't it a problem? I'll tell you why it's not a problem. Because what's mine, says Rabbi Shimon, my intent is not to make a charitz. My intent is not to furrow, to drag a ditch in my backyard, which would be an issue of choresh, right? Plowing. No, that guy doesn't want to plow. He wants to set up for shashudas, sudash lishit. He needs to take a table from point A to point B. Yeah, okay. So he'll drag it along the ground. But it doesn't matter, says Rabbi Shimon. He says that it is permissible to do. Now, I want to show you the language. The language seems to be that it's totally fine, right? Totally fine to do. We'll talk about if it's Durabun or not. That's not really a major issue for now. But says Rabbi Shimon, not a problem. Okay, this, my friends, is the major source for what's called Davar She'eno mit kaved, something which I do not have intent. I don't have intent, says Rabbi Shimon. My intent is to set up for Sudash the Sheet. By doing so, I have to move a table from point A to point B, a picnic bench from point A to point B. And by doing so, yes, it's true, I might create a charitz, I might, you know, furrow, but it's not a problem of choresh because that is not my intent. That is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Is that clear, everybody? That is like baseline, right? That's a bit. Again, this is a concept called Davar She'no Mitkavein. I do not have intent. Look at the language. Bilvad She'lo Yitkavein. I want to ask you a question.
Are you able to share your screen?
Oh, whoops. Sorry, I thought I was sharing my
screen. It's okay.
Thanks for telling me. Share screen. Okay, right? So again, says Rabbi Shimon, Gorer Adamita Kisev Esafsal, Ubilvan Shelo Yidkaven Lasor Charitz. Okay? That is the very, very important condition, intention. Now, I ask you a question. Why should intent matter? Why should intent matter? I have a video camera, right? My video camera, which is being broadcasted on the ground, says that Greenberg made a furrow, he dug in his backyard on Shabbat. That gets out there, says, look what Greenberg did! He violated a biblical prohibition, Isur Doraita, called Choresh. He plowed his backyard, right? I don't understand. If I plowed my backyard, what does it matter, my intent? Why does intent not matter for Rabbi Shimon? What would you say and why? Smaller group today, maybe hopefully more participation. What do you think? And I will call out on you. What do you think? Why should intent matter?
Don't we care about Malachas Machshavas?
So I think that, was that Ellie?
Yeah.
It's very odd because going to Ellie, you're muted, but I was able to hear you talk. Okay, that's really interesting. All right. Wow, that's like magical. He's so powerful that he can even go through. Because I don't know, the red thing is on. Okay, I don't know. I thought maybe he's in the room somewhere. I'm looking around. So, now his microphone's off. Okay. Now, said Eli, versibo melechet machshevet asra Torah. When it comes to Shabbat, there's a fascinating concept called melechet machshevet. The Torah says, when we talk about the building of the Mishkan, melechet machshevet, melechet machshevet. It's all about intent. So, now, by the way, when it comes to other issues in halacha, intent might not matter. You know how, like, I broke your window? Oops, I didn't intend to break your window. Well, guess what we say about that? Too bad. Adam Amazik, you got to pay, right? The concept of, oops, I didn't mean to get into an accident and smash your Lamborghini. Why should I pay you? The answer is too bad. When it comes to damages, intent does not matter. You cause damage, you have to pay for it, right? Okay, would you have to pay for, you know, certain other compensations? Okay, that's not for now. But you classic case of a baseball game. You smash a window, you got to pay. No one intends to smash the window, right? So it doesn't matter. Now, the idea here is when it comes to Shabbos, intent matters, says Eli, melechem machshevet, asra Torah. And this is not melechem machshevet. I didn't intend to do it. So that fits very nicely with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. I'm just going to jump to what's the halacha? Well, you're going to see a machloket. Rav Amar ein halacha ki Rabbi Shimon begreira. Shmuel Amar halacha the Rabbi Shimon begreira. So there's a machloket because, let me tell you something. Although this is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon, not everybody agrees. There are those who, in fact, argue with the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Okay? And there's a machloket if we hold like Rabbi Shimon. By the way, we actually do hold like Rabbi Shimon. Who does Rabbi Shimon argue against? You'll see that in a moment. Let me delete that source. Let me show you another source. Actually, I might have only done one source for now. Yeah, I only did one source. Okay, that's the main source because everything else is not going to matter so much. And let me explain to you why. That is all wonderful and beautiful. However, I told you right now the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon, however, waves a white flag under a certain condition. What is the condition that Rabbi Shimon says you're chayav? One very specific case that Rabbi Shimon waves the white flag. He says, davar shino mitkaven, you're pater. Your putter, you didn't mean to make a ditch. You meant to step a picnic table to set up for a sudash lishi. You're totally exempt. But I will admit, in a certain case, you're chayav. Even without intent. Yes, Eli. Yes, without intent. What about melech and machshev? We have to figure that out. Hold on to your, we have to come up with a svara in a second. But without intent, you're going to be chayav. What is the case that even Rabbi Shimon says you're chayav, David?
Is it when it's nichale? When it's beneficial?
Whoa. Careful. Nichale, I don't understand nichale. Don't I want my bench to be slept?
Sorry?
Don't I want my ground to be slept? How can I not want it?
Well, what if, in this example, if the hole that you're making is good because you're going to be using it to plant the seed later?
Okay, hold on. You're jumping two steps, not one step. Hold on for a second.
Okay.
What is the situation where Rabbi Shimon waves a white flag and says davar sheino mitkaven? Even he says it's chayav. The case is not nichale. He would argue nichale is actually you're still pater. By the way, okay. What does he argue though? But in which case would he say you're chayav? He'd admit that you're chayav in a case of. The topic of this year. Huh. What's the topic of this year?
Psik Reisha.
What's a psik reisha? Okay. So the psik reisha literally means lahafsik reisha, your head. It talks about a case where they did not have Toys R Us. The Gemara talks about a case where they didn't have Toys R Us. I know. Can you believe it? A world without Toys R Us. A world without Amazon. A world without. But so what do? You're a father and you want to get a toy for your child. So what do you do? You're desperate for a toy. You must be really desperate for a toy. So you take a knife and you cut off the head of a chicken. I did not make this up. And you give your child the head of a chicken to play with. Again, no soccer balls, no footballs, no baseballs. But heads of chicken they had. And you're, I guess kids were not as grossed out as they are today. I guess adults were not as grossed out as they are today. I guess they had better access to sharp objects and to livestock. And so instead of buying, you know, a $5 rubber ball, you chop off the head of a chicken and you say to my child, Johnny, my son, here's a toy to play with. It's the head of a chicken. Now, says Rabbi Shimon, question, what is your intent? Your intent is to what? Your intent is to provide a soccer ball for your son who's desperate for entertainment, clearly. Desperate for entertainment. You want to provide a soccer ball? You have no, here we go. You have no kavana. Hear this? No kavana. I have no, however, this is called a psik resha. Why is it a psik resha? I have a question. Would it be possible to provide your child with the head of a chicken without killing a chicken? By the way, what's the problem with killing a chicken on Shabbos? Shechita. Netilat neshama. You're not allowed to be shochet. You can't kill an animal or anything on Shabbos, right? You're not allowed to do that. Netilat neshama, shechita. Okay. Therefore, it's forbidden. Now, I have a question. What are the chances of you providing a soccer ball made out of the head of a chicken without killing the chicken? What are the chances of you giving a soccer ball to your child and not kill the chicken? Answer, what are the chances? Zero. It would be, you'd have to be a magician or somehow, right? Or a very fancy surgeon to be able to chop off the head of a chicken and not kill the chicken. Says Rabbi Shimon, I will surrender. Here it is. This quote is mentioned many places in Shas. You see my finger? My mouse? Mode Rabbi Shimon, I surrender. I admit. The psik resha, the lo yamus, is it possible to chug off the head of a chicken and not have chicken die? The answer is Rabbi Shimon is mode. Okay, so Rabbi Shimon admits that in a case of, here we go, davar shelo mitkavein, but it's a psik resha, meaning I have no intent to kill the animal, but I want to provide the head of a chicken for my son to play with. In that case of a psik resha, which is 100% it's going to happen, he's moda that what? That is usher. Probably, now, is this usher d'oraisa or d'rabbanon? I don't want to take a stand yet. Okay? Just as he's moda. Okay?
So,
yeah,
is davar shemini coming? The difference between davar shemini coming and psik resha is that they're both doing malacha without the intention of doing the malacha. Like with the intention is getting a side benefit, but davar shemini coming is not guaranteed for the malacha to happen, whereas davar psik resha it is guaranteed.
Excellent, very good. That appears to be the only difference. So, meaning, let me go back to the case of schlepping a bench. When I schlep a bench, for now, that makes the most sense. I schlep a bench. If it's a psik resha, for sure going to happen, then it would be usher to do, even schlepping a bench, right? The truth is, the Rashi's not on here. It's very, in order to find what Rashi explains, that you have to go, believe it or not, is Rashi in Sukkah is the best Rashi for this. There's Rashi. Okay. Who went to Nitivot here? Ali, David. Remember you guys learned Sukkah in grade 8? I'm not exaggerating. Nitivot HaTorah has been learning the Perat Lulava Gazel in grade 8. I'm going to tell you why it's over 20 years. Because I tutored, you know, Avi Libman? This is a lot. Avi Libman, Esther Libman's son. Like the Dr. Bob, you know, on Springgate, Avi Libman. I don't know, he's a doctor. He married a writer, right? He married a writer?
Okay.
So he's now, what, 30? 28, 30? I tutored him in grade 8. grade 8, I just got married 20 years ago, 21 years ago, whatever it was, and they were learning it then. Probably the same chaver. Again, I don't think that, again, Gemara hasn't changed much. I'm sure it was a great chaver then. I'm sure they got it better now. So that's what I remember. I was tutoring him.
Sounds funny.
And
I could probably reset the Mishnah off by heart.
What was that?
I could probably reset the Mishnah off by heart. We did it. We just spent so much time on the Mishnah itself.
It's a great Mishnah. And I remember when I was in, I went back to Yeshiva for part of Shana Bet. And in May, they learned the Perek Lulav HaGazal. Oh, wait, it was Shana Olav. I can't remember. But I learned in the summer Lulav HaGazal. So when I came back to Toronto, everyone in great Netivot was doing Lulav HaGazal. I'm like, oh, it's like a dream come true. I can literally tutor anybody at any time. It was extremely convenient. So when you're first married, you know, any tutoring job you got was absolutely gold. So there we go. So, and it was just funny that Avi Libman needing tutoring help in grade 8. It's a great story. It goes to show you, right? Okay. Anyways, so you know, Avi Libman is actually, you know, he's a doctor. He's extremely bright. I think he's finished Masechta Zagmar already. Okay, there you go. He was worried about getting into Or Chaim. It was a funny story. Okay. 20 plus years ago. Here we go. So why am I telling you all this? Because in the case of Sukkah, oh, now I know why. For whatever reason, this Rashi really is detailed in the Gemara and Sukkah. I'm not interested in going to tell you the case. I mean, I'll tell you the case because it's a very interesting case. It has to deal with Toby's sister, right? I'll tell you what I mean by that. Oh, no, Hadar. So we know it's Hadar, right? We know it's talking about Sukkah. That's why, right? So we know that, but this is not referring to the exactly it's Hadar. That's an Etrog. It's referring to a Hadas. Okay, similar to Toby's sister's name. That's why I thought of it. And the Hadas, that grows berries. Hadas grows berries. And they want to use, they wonder if you're allowed to, let's say these berries were edible in the Hadas. You guys remember this? Remember this case? You for sure did this. Great. There's no question in my mind. Anyone remember? Toby, you went to the Divot too? You went to remember this? I'm not going to ask people. You remember grade 8. This was a long time ago. So the case in the Gemara is if you have a Hadas and it has berries and you want to eat the berries. So a Hadas with berries you're not allowed to use for Arba Minim. But let's say you're hungry. So what do? You munch on the berries because you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov. You can pluck berries on Yom Tov. And then all of a sudden, you're like, oh, wait a second. Now that I just ate the berries, I now created a kosher hadas. You hear? So can I do that? You follow? So I'm plucking berries. So again, I'm allowed to eat berries on Yom Tov. I'm not allowed to use a hadas that is berries, but I'm hungry. So I'm munching. All of a sudden, 10 minutes later, I just realized I took my hadas that was pasul and now it's kosher. Am I allowed to do that? Okay, that's the case in the Gemara. So, and I have no intent, right? I'm hungry. I'm munching. So the Gemara there says, yeah, are you allowed to do it or not? So I don't want to get into that technical detail, but they talk about, oh, maybe you're not allowed to. Why? The Ha'abai V'Rava, both of them say, Mode Rabbi Shimon bepsik reishav lo yamud, right? Even Rabbi Shimon, who says that an unintentional act is permitted, remember, slipping the bench is permitted, said so only in a case where the prohibition result is possible but not guaranteed. However, where the prohibited result is inevitable, just as death inevitably ensures from the decapitation, bracket of the head of a chicken, bracket, the act is prohibited. In the case of picking berries off a myrtle branch for food, one cannot claim we do not intend for the prohibited result of preparing the myrtle branch for use to ensure. In this case, the myrtle branch would never be rendered fit. How is it permitted? The answer is, okay, we actually have a kosher myrtle branch, meaning it's permitted because the guy already has his beautiful hadassim in his lulav, right? So therefore, we're really certain, even though he's munching on his lulav, on his hadas, it's permitted because he has other ones. And really, 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 even though it's an F, this is actually a very interesting case, we're going to allow him to use it because it's we think that he had absolutely no intent whatsoever of doing it. And since he had absolutely no intent of doing it, and it's clear he had no intent of doing it because he had kosher hadasim, therefore we will allow him to use the hadas. Very interesting case because it seems to fly against what we've been saying. We'll come back to it in a second. But I want to read you this Rashi. And then we'll go back to this case again. Moda Rabbi Shimon, but Omer, Echtoch Rosh Behema Zo B'Shabbos, I'll chop off the head of this animal Shabbos, Eini Rotzeh Shetamut. I don't want the animal to die. Kevan Di Efsher Shalot Tamut. Since it is impossible for the animal not to die, here we go. Kim Mitkavein Chashivlei. Look what Rashi says. Rashi says, when a person chops off the head of an animal, and it's inevitable, it's upgraded mitkaven chashiv lei. Can anyone explain to me what's Rashi saying? What's Rashi saying? What's the rationale for why Psik Resha, even Rabbi Shimon says Rechayim?
I guess if you know something's going to happen, that's as good as, like, if you expect something to happen, it's as good as intending it to happen.
Since I know that the death of this chicken is inevitable, it's as if I intend for it to happen.
I feel like expectations, right? Sort of the same idea.
What do you mean by expectations?
Meaning when you intend for something, you expect a certain result. Likewise, if there's some inevitable consequence, then you are essentially intending for that result. That's what's expected.
That's what's expected. So Ellie is saying, listen, in many ways they're both the same. If I intend, meaning I want to furrow my backyard, so by stepping a bench across it, this is what I want to do. I intend for this to do, it happens. So too, when something is, let's say, 100% inevitable, like chopping off the head of a chicken, I know this is, I'm expecting for this to happen. It's inevitable. I've seen pictures. I've done it before. It's literally, says Ellie, it's almost the exact same thing. So to upgrade a Psik Resha and say, you have no intent, you do have intent. Why do you have intent? Because you know it's 100% sure to happen. By the way, is this 100% sure to happen? What about 98%? Okay, let's, for argument's sake, stick to 100%. Since this is 100% going to happen, it's like you have Kavana because you did it yesterday. You did it last week. You know the animal dies. You know the animal dies, right? So if you know this is going to happen, you have the intent. You've seen it before. And therefore, a Psik Resha, Rabbi Shimon, has to say, he admits, surrenders, waves the white flag, you are Chayav. Okay? So the Mitzkam Chashiv Lei, V'chiyam Ridan. And when we say, Davar She'ei Mitkaven Mutar, it's permissible, Kegon Hecha, the Efshar Lei below Isser. It's doable to do with no Isser. Kegon, remember our case? Gorer, Adam, Mita, Kisev, Zasa. A guy schleps a bench, a chair, right? A table. Bilvad Shaloid Kaven Lasos Haritz, says Rashi, when it comes to schlepping your bench and your table and your shepherd on the ground, are you 100% sure that your bench, that your table is going to dig into your ground? No. It could just glide over it, right? You know, if it's very soft, remember up until yesterday, we haven't had really any rain for a couple of weeks. You could drag a bench over a very dry surface. It is not really going to penetrate, right? It'll just, you know, grab a couple of millimeters. Oh, but if it rained, it could really go in an inch or two into the ground, right? So therefore, and you're going to tell me every time, no, it's inevitable, 80%, 90%, 50%, whatever it is, it's for sure not 100%. So Rashi says, therefore, it's not a problem shoving your table across the field, right? Yeah, it might happen. Sometimes it happens. 10%, 20%, 90%. It might happen. And by the way, can you schlep the bench? By the way, let's say, and this is going to be very important. Let's say you really have no kavana, and let's say you do it very slowly. If you do it really slowly, even if it just rained, you probably could still do it without making a hole. You do it really slowly, right? When do you do it? When you tip it and it like sinks in the back and then you schlep it. If you do it really slowly and carefully, right, you probably could do it without even making a mark. So Efshar Ligrub, by the way, hear this line here? Efshar Ligarer below Haritz. It is possible to schlep this bench without furrowing. It is possible. Ki Avid Nami Haritz Havim Malacha Gemura. And if it were to make a charitz, it'd be a full-fledged malacha gemura, but lo machayev. We're not going to machayev this person. But in our case, meaning the case of chopping off a chicken, let's use this, the original case, mode, he'd be mode. Rishim would admit you're chayev. Okay? For whatever reason, that we would not be an issue in a case of sukkah. I'll just conclude this case because tikkun. What are you violating? Tikkun mana. So it's not an issue of tikkun mana when you have another hadas. Why not? So you're not preparing a vessel because since the ultimate objective is to render the lulav and accompanying. And those pieces already fit. Picking the berries of myrtle branch is not inevitable preparation of a vessel. Therefore, the berries and the myrtle branch is therefore rendered fit. You're allowed to use it for the mitzvah. Okay? Not violent to gemara. You're allowed to pluck your berries on your hadas. But again, what I really want to focus on here is Rashi's understanding of psik resha is that, and versus davar shelo mitkaven. That's what I think David actually said. Before David even read Rashi. I mean, David read the Rashi in grade 8. So either he remembered the Rashi from grade 8, which doesn't surprise me at all. And this Rashi was covered in grade 8, I remember.
I also, to be honest, that some of the, I know that we, there was, I took one class in Rakhine that sort of covered this topic a little bit of Sikh Resha, the Rashi Mikavian, and all the other ones. So.
Okay, great. Okay, good. Okay, good. And now he's saying he remembers from high school. He says, grade 8. You know, grade 8.
Just so happens to be that we're doing two topics that are blending together now that I like learned with like.
Okay, there great, you go. Okay, you know? Now it's time for Chazar. Okay, good. Okay, good. Okay, so that's the, so those are the, so that's Rashi's understanding of our situation. So let's get rid of Sukkah. All your, what time is it? 37. Okay, good. Let me show you, and especially because we have a Brit Milah today, Joel Justin, how could we not talk about the case by Brit Milah? So let me show you another example. The reason why I want to show many examples is because I want to show, first of all, it'll give you a good sampling of different cases in Shas, because you're going to see in a minute. Right now, I'm focusing on Shabbos, right? Yom Tov Shabbos. But we're going to expand outside. Here's our quasi-first expansion outside. So let's say a person, a baby needs a Brit Milah, but by the location of where the Brit Milah takes place, he also has a tzara'at. The baby has a wound from tzara'at. And you're not allowed to remove tzara'at. There's a whole process of what you need to do. Oh, no, that's not this one. Oops. I'm like, what? That's a chila zone. Okay, oops. That's a chila zone. That's one second. That's a Talisha case. I told you, there's a lot of cases. That's not that case. Ah, this is it. Brit Mila. Oh, that's actually what I said to Joel. Okay, David, I'm going to send that to you also. You like that? Where's the Brit Mila case? No, that's not there. Told you a lot of cases. No, that's not there. Yeah, it's here. Okay. So here we go. A person has tzara'at on the makom of the Brit Mila. So here the problem is, by doing the Brit Mila, you're removing tzara'at. And what's the pasuk? Hishomer b'nega tzara'at lishmar ma'od v'lasot. So you're not allowed to remove tzara'at in that manner. It's all process. I don't want to do the process right now. It's not our issue, right? But you're, it's a, so what do? The mo wants to do tzara'at. He wants to do Brit Mila, which is a mitzvah to say. He wants to say. But by doing it, it's going to be. But what is this mo doing? This mo couldn't cause about tzara'at. The mo is a mohel. He wants to do the Brit Mila. So is he allowed to do it or not? So again, this is a psik resha. What's going to happen? Right? So it talks about our situation, right? Like we said, I don't know. The Farsh told me the Kavain. Maybe it's Usher, right? So Rabbi Yehuda holds, by the way, he argues with Shimon. The Varsha meets Kavin is Asur. Rava says, even according to Rishimon, Mother Rishimon, see, Grace Yamut, meaning, so I don't understand. According to both opinions, this Milal should be in trouble. Why? If you hold a Rabbi Yehuda, it's Asur, because even the Varsha meets Kavin is Asur. And even Rishimon should hold it's Asur. Why? Because it's Psik Resha. You remove the skin, you're going to remove the Tzarat. That's a violation. How can you give a Brit Milah? You are, it's inevitable. It's a Psik Resha. How can you do it according to both opinions? Okay? That's the case. Okay. So that's the, again, how do they resolve the case? I'm not interested in it. But I wanted to show you that by Brit Milah, that's another example where it comes up. I'm going to give you another great case that it comes up. It's the Gemara and Shabbos by a Nazir. And this is a great question. A Nazir is not allowed to do what? Cut their hair. I always say, can a woman become a Nazir? A Nizira? I said this before. Can a woman become a Nazir? Nizira? Yes or no? Woman? Yes. The answer is because it says, Ish o Isha ki yafli Nazir, right? Man or woman. So, this, by the way, comes up on Shabbos. This is combing your hair. Can a Nazir comb their hair? What's the problem with combing your hair? What happens when you comb your hair? I wouldn't know this. I don't comb my hair. But if I asked probably Sherelle or Toby, they'd tell me. I don't know, but Moshe, your hair's pretty short. Ellie, maybe, right? Sometimes your hair comes out. So how can a Nazir comb their hair? Will they not be pulling out their hair? Pulling out your hair is a Doraita if you're a Nazir. How can you do it? Right? V'nezer lo yirah rosho. So, a Nazir can wash their hair, but not comb their hair. Oh, Nazir chofeif fas peis avalo sarek. You can wash it. You know, you can do this. Remember? Right? You can, what's that called? Lather your hair with soap. You're not allowed to be sarek. You cannot comb it. Why not? Because when you go in the shower and you put the shampoo in your hair, yeah, what might happen? Hair might come out. Might come out. When you comb your hair, what will happen? Definitely some hair will come out. Now this, by the way, is a very interesting case. And let me explain why. Because, is it really every time you comb your hair? I could ask Toby or Sherelle, but they're not on video anymore, so I don't ask them. But I remember when I used to, oh, Toby's back. Toby, I have a question. Toby, when you comb your hair, does hair always come out? Each stroke? Or no?
What do you probably. Think? Oh, probably. Probably at least one strand of hair.
Okay. But, okay, that's very interesting.
I agree with Toby.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, wow. Okay, it's been so long since I've combed my hair. I don't remember anymore.
You saying there's a difference between combing and brushing, though? Because comb is like the what is it called? The thistles are closer together.
I don't know. They say that like combing is to like take out knots and brushing is just to like smooth it out. But like really, brushing also takes out knots. I don't know. It's
Toby. Here's my question, Toby and Sherelle. Yes. Help us out over here. Help us.
Okay.
Let's say you were to take. I mean, would you call it a psik resha? Would you call? How about brushing your hair? Does brushing hair also remove hair?
Yes.
Yeah.
In my experience.
Each same. Brush removes hair?
I think so.
Probably.
Safe to say.
Okay. Safe to say. Yeah. Ben, can you relate to this? Brushing or
cleaning? Yeah. I don't think as much. Like,
but also,
I wouldn't say every stroke. For sure.
Wouldn't serve your jelly. The type of brushing.
Also, it's hard to say because, like, naturally, like you lose hair all the time, so you don't know if it's like from the brushing or if it's just like a loose strand of hair or whatever that's coming out anyways. Like,
yeah.
I don't know if you want to be picky about the details.
Uh-huh. You're saying that
yeah,
you just pulled the hair that was dead anyway.
Could be hairs that are already loose, and you're just kind of taking them out.
Right. That's fair. That's what I said to myself for a long time. Okay. So, okay. So let's read what it says here. Now, again, I don't know, and I probably something to do the research on, is what combs did they use 2,000 years ago? Meaning, how far apart were the thistles? Was that the right? Is that the word to use?
Bristles, I think.
Oh, bristles. That's
teeth.
Right. Yeah, bristles.
Teeth on a comb and then bristles on
teeth.
A brush.
Oh, okay, good. Teeth, right? And I know there are different types of combs. There are ones that are very close together, ones that are farther apart together, right? So that, by the way, not all combs are created equally. You could have a comb, in theory, that even hair that's thicker maybe wouldn't remove everyone, right? So these are going to be, right? So this is, by the way, is a very interesting modern day application, by the way, because let's say, do you look at Psi Gratia, and maybe we'll come back to this. In fact, we will come back to this. If I were to comb my hair 10 times, a hair would come out. But each time, hair won't necessarily come out. You follow? Do I look at Psi Gratia in its totality? Meaning, if I comb my hair 10 times, by the end of the 10th time, three hairs will come out. But each time I comb my hair, it's not necessarily going to come out. But if I do it 10 times, statistically, yes, 100% after 10 times, one hair will come out. But each time I do it is not a Psi Gratia. Only the totality of the combing experience is a Psi Gratia, right? So what do I look at it? Do I look at every stroke separately? Or do I look at the combing brushing experience in its totality? That would be a major nafka mina lahalacha, I'll tell you why. Because if you tell me each one stroke, it's not a Psi Gratia. And if you want to argue, and this is what David threw out a line, which we're going to get to, I hope, by the end of the day, even though we only have 10 minutes left, but I think we will at least touch on it. Not all Psi Gratias are created equally. Maybe I'll throw this in right now, just because David said, what about saying, he said it by Darshan Mitkaveh, but he meant to say it by Psi Gratia. So that's what I'm going to, right? That what about if I don't want this to happen? Not only do I not want it to happen, it's lo nichale. Lo nicha means it's not noach. It's anti-good. You know, the problem of combing your hair is that you actually do want to remove the ones that are weaker, and it's like pruning a tree. It's like pruning your hair, right? So I'm not so sure if combing is the best example of this, because it could be every time you comb and the hair comes out, it is a nichale, right? Although there's another category called lo achpatle. I don't care. I'm not so sure, maybe the category. Combing your hair is an interesting one. But if I go to, and I'm going to remove this Gemara, if I go to, let's go to another totally different case, and that is over here. I don't want to do that case. Let's do this case. In Zvachim. So wait, let's say,
just,
yeah.
Oh yeah, one quick question though. About that idea of, whether each comb should be each individual brush, like stroke should be considered, or the whole thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That strikes me as crazy, because like, when do we say that in other situations? We don't. I mean, if you take like mixing food on Shabbos as an example, like you could say the same thing. At what point are you really mixing it? Maybe one stroke isn't really mixing, and then the next stroke is not really mixing, but all of it all together, you end up with a mixed product, you know? But yet, it's still prohibited there.
What would you say? We should look at each stroke individually, or look at the totality of your combing experience?
I think look at the combing experience, I think.
Okay. So this would be a machloket, a contemporary poskim about, very good, about what you look at each stroke. Okay. So hold on to that. By the way, did that Gemara Nazar give us an insight? Point Nazar might have given us an insight into the answer to that. Okay, but I want to show you another case. I want to show you that this case doesn't just come up in Shabbos. This case comes up also in Zvachim. Let's say I donate wine to the Mizbeach. I say, this is water, but I want to dedicate wine. And what do we want to do to it? I want to put it on as part of my korban. And here's a problem, though. When I spritz wine, won't some of it go on the Mizbeach and hit the coals? Aren't I extinguishing the coals? Why is this an issue? Because it says in the Torah, Eish Tukai Mizbeach. You always have to have the coals being kindling on Mizbeach. Not a Shabbos issue. None of the Shabbos. So by me spritzing wine, I will extinguish some of the coals. It's a liquid, going on coals. So how am I ever allowed to spritz wine on the altar? Won't it lead? I mean, let's face it, my accuracy is not perfect, right? It's going to go onto the coals, and I'm going to extinguish the coals. So how am I ever allowed to spritz wine on the Mizbeach? Won't I be violating this Esh HaMizbeach Tukad, that I must always have these coals kindling at all times? So that's the Gemara's question, right? I'm sure you have never thought of this. A little bit obscure case, but it's a good one. My mincha oil. It's right here. So what does he say here? Oh, where's that line? Looking for that one line. Thought I had it highlighted beforehand. I mean, I explained it. No, I went too fast. Did I see the case of secret here? Here it is right here. Okay, so I'm meeting our dev Yayin. A guy who donates wine, mevi u'mizalfo agabei ha'ishim. He sprinkles it. Matayma, the yayin takriv, the nesach hatziyahi, nishal Hashem. V'haka machbe kibui b'mitzat? Lo shema kibui. No, if you extinguish it a little bit, that's not kibui. You're not violating this extinguishing of the mizbeach. Why not? So that's what the Gemara needs to deal with, okay? And it's interesting. How are we supposed to deal with this challenge? Okay, the Gemara resolves it somehow. But everyone asks a question. What about Psik Resha? What about Psik Resha? So on this, Rashi says, I think it's Rashi here. But that's a passage we quoted. Eish tamid gam mizbeach, right? I said that. Maybe Rashi doesn't say anything. Who says? I thought Rashi here says big spritzes versus small spritzes. Where's that? Okay. Where's that Gemara? I can't remember where it is right now. But the Gemara there, Rashi could be. That's what's complicated is that you have to, there's all these comments about Shas. You got to kind of, in order to create the whole picture, you got to put it together. And I'll just tell you what Rashi explains, and the commentaries seem to agree that the issue is there's what's called Ziluv Katan, Ziluv Gadol. What are we talking about? I don't know. Yeah, it's true. If I take a whole pitcher of water and I douse it on the Mizbeach, it would be extinguished. But if I do a little spritz, you're going to tell me a little spritz is going to extinguish it? Not at all. We've all seen examples of you can take two drops of water, put it on a coal, and it has zero impact. Yeah, sure, you dump a whole bucket, it'll have an impact. But since a person could spritz a couple of drops and have zero impact, it's not even considered a psik resha, which is why our Gemara, you'll notice our Gemara, doesn't even mention psik resha. You follow? There's the various Mishonim, when they want to talk about psik resha, quote this case, and they say, why isn't that a psik resha? Answer is, remember, it follows the same principle. The answer is because it's not really inevitable that when you spritz wine on the Mizbeach, you're going to extinguish. It's not true. It would only be true if I douse it with a bucket of wine. Then for sure it would extinguish. But a couple of spritzes, you can't tell me it's for sure. And therefore, all the commentaries say that's not an example of psik resha because it's not inevitable. Again, trying to explain to us the difference between davar, and by the way, it's also davar shalom mitkaven. That's a given. You have any kavanah for this? You have no kavanah to extinguish these coals. You want to bring them to Mizbeach. You want to donate it. You want it, right? And therefore, it is in fact not considered an issue. We hold, okay, Davar she'eino mitkaven, you have no intent. It's not for sure going to happen. Without the spritz it on the mizbeach. Okay, that was another example that's given. There are many other examples of psik resha. There are many other examples of psik resha that I don't want to go into right now because time has essentially ended. The only thing that I want to show you is one more on Daf Kuf. Where is it? Kuf Gimel. Ah, here it is. This is going to be our last case. I'm going to throw it out there, and this is what we're going to pick up with next week. The Gemara here, and again, we don't have time for the case, unfortunately, but this case here that the Gemara talks about is, you know, not all psik reshas are created equally. And that's what David said a little bit earlier. What about if psik resha and lo nichale, I don't want it at all. It's bad for me, in fact, right? Would that make a difference versus a psik resha de nichale that I do want? There's one opinion called the Aruch who says in a case that it's not nichale, you don't want it, it makes it a permitted act. Meaning, let me explain. A psik resha that you don't want. Now, when it comes to chopping the head of a chicken, you want the head of a chicken, right? You want the animal dead. Why do you want the animal dead? You want to play soccer. But when it comes to, for example, spritzing on the mizbeach, let's use that as an example, or the Gemara of the Hadas, taking the berries, you, in the case of the mizbeach, this is the mizbeach case, do you know why there it's permissible? God forbid, it is not noach to you. It is not convenient for you to extinguish the coals on the altar. You don't want to do that. Not only do you have no intent, but you don't want to do it. You know why you don't want to do it? Because it's a violation of an isser. So when you don't want something, he argues, it's called a psik resha delo nichali. He especially says, in a rabbinic violation, in Isser de Rabbanan, which, by the way, Kibbutz and Mizbech is only a de Rabbanan. Do you know why? Because to extinguish a fire is Rabbanan. What's the Doraita? To extinguish for something positive, Lasot Pecham, to make a coal is when you're allowed to extinguish. Remember, in order to violate any Isser Doraita, it needs to be constructive. Destructive is never an Isser Doraita. Right? Remember, erasing is the Rabbanan. Only erasing with the intent to write is your erasing constructive, right? Removing is right. That's in the Mishnah. It lists everything. It has to be constructive. Anything which is destructive is rabbinic. Therefore, says the Aruch, everyone disagrees with him. Psik resha, delo nichale. If you do psik resha, even though it's inevitable, on a rabbinic prohibition, he argues is mutar lechatchila. Everyone's going to argue with that. What I want to discuss next week, I'm going to end here, is why is it? Let's understand, what does this mean of a psik resha dolichane? I want to talk a little philosophy next week. What's the philosophical underpinnings of what's going on, of what might lie behind this debate between intent and no intent, psik resha de nichale and de lo nichale? Understand the philosophical underpinnings behind it, which will help us perhaps lead to situations of modern day, especially in the areas of technology. You know, believe it or not, this will come up with Siri, this will come up with Amazon Echoes, right? You know, when it comes to things that I don't intend to do, even though it might be a psik resha, would this be something I have to be concerned about or not? So next week, we're going to do a little philosophy behind these concepts, and then we're going to talk about very modern day applications of where they might come up in our daily lives, and again, only in Hilchot Shabbos area. Okay, so that will be the topic, God willing, for next week. Now that we have background of Davar Shelo Mitkaven, and we have background on Psik Resha, we've seen not all, but many examples of Psik Resha. Now let's understand the philosophical underpinnings behind it among the applications next week. Have a great week, everybody. Have a great day. Thanks so much for joining.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.